societies come and go. The differences and some of the values and what the focus is. I mean, how long has it been since your father said, when I say jump, you just say how high, you know? That's just another society that came from a ways back. I might still be using that. It just depends. I don't think so, but, you know, it could have slipped out. Sayings that came from a society earlier than our present one is, you know, business before pleasure. That used to be a comment that would be said. Business before pleasure. Work before play. You know, eat all your vegetables or there'll be no dessert. And the point was that there were certain things that were necessary and there were certain things that were optional. And it was very heavily built into our structure. Those concepts are not as heavily expressed today as they used to be. I thought it was interesting. I sat down last night and began to read the World News and Prophecy, the recent one. And thinking back in my mind to the discussion that I had last week in Portland with the members that I stayed with, who we've only recently met, but, you know, when you stay in their home and you have dinner and you sit up at night and you talk and have conversation, you build the friendship. But we had quite a long discussion back and forth about the difference between those things that are most important and those things that are most desired. And when you come to that why on a road and you have to make that choice, how important it was indeed to choose that which is most important over that which is most desired. Do the things that are important first. So when I picked this out last night, and there was an article by Melvin Rhodes on the movie The Queen, and inside of it, it says duty before self. And it was the exact same comparison. Duty first, and then self comes and follows after that. It doesn't mean that there aren't basic needs that have to be met, and they will be met, but what it means is when you have to choose in terms of priority, duty comes first. Again, that was an earlier society, because it references here Queen Elizabeth. It says the film, The Queen, highlights the dilemma of Queen Elizabeth II, not only during the week of the crisis, referring to Diana's death and the week that followed, because that's the context of the movie, but also at other times. Duty must always come before self. It says today most people, to most people, that is an antiquated outlook on life, but it's the way the Queen was brought up. And the article goes through and begins to address some of the issues in her life and how that played out in that way. He says, my mother was born just a few days after the Queen. She had the same outlook on life. Duty before self. Her family always came first. This was clearly a virtue among many of the generation. And then he traces back, he begins to show biblically how Paul said, he warned that in the last days, times would come when men would be the lovers of themselves. That there would be a cultural change where it would be self first, satisfy the self, meet the needs of the self. And how Jesus Christ had talked about the leaders of the Gentiles and were those who were great exercised authority. And yet it shall not be so among you. Whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. So the contrast between what the church has been taught, what we have been taught, and what this world's value system is in some respects, in fact, what it has become more and more in these end days. An attitude of service is required of any leader seeking to serve God's people successfully. It goes back to when Queen Elizabeth now was then 21, and her birthday was on a visit in Johannesburg, South Africa. And she was there with her family, and they were on a tour specifically to thank those nations who were part of the Commonwealth who had supported England in the war, World War II. And they went on tour country by country, thanking them for their courage and their support and the convictions that they had shared. As I was speaking to the people of the empire on April 21st, 1947, on the occasion of her coming of age, Princess Elizabeth uttered the following: "I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong. God help me make good my vow, and God bless all of you who are willing to share in it." Elizabeth, who became queen upon the death of her father, less than 5 years later, has certainly lived up to the commitment she made. She has lived a life of service and sacrifice for her people. She has clearly put duty first. And in the monarchy there in Britain, her passing one day is going to be a very personal loss to that country and to many more. There are other articles that have been written, histories that have been written as well on society and what the passage of time has shown. Will and Ariel Durant wrote The Story of Civilization. It is a world history set, 10 volumes, a large set that walks through the recorded history, again, as they understood it. They then followed up with a Lessons of History book, 102 pages. And they took the large volume that recorded the actual events, and then they came down to a very small volume and said, well, here's what some of the lessons are from our perspective. They said a lesson of government. Since men love freedom, and the freedom of individuals in society requires some regulation of conduct, the first condition of freedom is its limitation. They said, when freedom is completely released and becomes absolute, it dies in chaos. So the principle of freedom is that it must be limited in its extent. Duty first. We're not free to simply do anything that we choose. Lesson of war. War is one of the constants of history and has not diminished with civilization or with democracy. In the last 3,420 years of recorded history, again, according to what they had recorded, only 268 have seen no war. The history of man is a history of war, warfare. It is to this day. Lesson of morals. Man has never reconciled himself to the Ten Commandments, never reconciled himself to the obligation, to the duty of obeying God in that way. And they describe that when different moral systems come and go and the society that lives in between it is loosed from a social structure where there is an obligation to, again, a set of moral principles, he said, an unmoored, unanchored generation surrenders itself to luxury, corruption, and a restless disorder of family and morals, and all but just a remnant desperately hold on to the old restraints and the ways. Society as an entity throws off the restraints, and again, what we have is social decay. And finally, they say, in terms of one of the overall lessons of history, is no one man in his lifetime can understand the context of the lessons learned over thousands of years in history. No one man's ideas can throw over or should throw over the lessons that have been built up as well in society. No man, however brilliant or well-informed, can come in one lifetime to such a fullness of understanding as to safely judge and dismiss the customs and institutions of his society. Now, what happened in the society that we have arrived in is that that is exactly what has taken place. Because you have individuals like Charles Darwin, who brought in the theory of evolution, which has literally changed the entire social structure, and one specific way stands above the rest. You have Karl Marx, who argued in Das Kapital and the Communist Manifesto for the communist system, and literally changed and impacted society in a fundamental way. Again, one way more specific than the rest. Both of them took God out of the picture and put man first. Took the social recognition of duty because duty implies that there is a law of some kind that we are beholding to. There's an obligation that some high power or some social structure gives to us. And therefore, we have duty. We have, as is spoken, duty to our country. And yet, men came along, others as well, and they threw out the fact that there was duty to God, and they transferred that strictly to where there is satisfaction to man, that we would be in pursuit of our own hopes and dreams. Duty recognizes that there is a higher power. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream recorded in Daniel 4. Now we're getting to the fine print. I made it through my introduction. It was a little bit of a break, I suppose. Daniel 4 is a dream Nebuchadnezzar had about a large tree in the kingdom that sheltered the animals and sheltered peoples and grew to be great and massive, that was going to be cut down, but that it would be banded at the very base so that it would not cease to exist. And in verse 16, his dream said, "Let his heart be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the heart of an animal, and let seven times pass over him." So again, the tree is going to be chopped down, this great entity on which a kingdom then was built, is going to be chopped down because of the arrogance and the personal sin of the individual himself. But there's a reason again for that. It's verse 17. "This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones. It is not just a judgment against one man so that he will learn a specific lesson. It is bigger than that. It says, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. In order that everyone who sees or reads or understands will be reminded that God is the one who is in charge, and he gives us the law, our structure to live by, and we have duty. We have obligation to him. That he gives it to whomever he will, and he sets over it the lowest of men. By our calling, we do recognize that we have a higher purpose. Our purpose is not simply to make our way in this life. Our purpose is to put God first. And as Alan was saying, to teach it to our children, that our children may teach it to their children as well. In John 13, when we see the purpose of the church in terms of how we should function one to another, John 13, the passage that is often read here in 34 and 35 said, "By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." And so that is important. That is fundamental. It is proof indeed that the church is being fruitful in being led by God's Spirit. But if you just go down to verse 36 and see the context now that follows, it gives an illustration that relates to how love is expressed in a very strong sense. "Simon Peter said to him, 'Lord, where are you going?' And Jesus answered him, 'Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward.' And Peter said to him, 'Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake.' And Jesus answered him, 'Will you lay down your life for my sake? Will you love me to that degree? Will you love your brethren to that degree? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow until you have denied me three times.'" The point was, without God's Spirit, when he was beginning in his service here, he was not able to lay down his life. He wasn't able to show love to that degree. And Christ said, "Will you do that? Can you really love me that much?" He wanted to, but it wasn't until he had received the Holy Spirit and been strengthened in that way that he was able to carry out that kind of commitment, that he was able to be dutiful before God in that way. There was a member of the church some years back, a pastor in the field, whose family had a nationally recognized business. And their name was right on the product that many of us would use on occasion And he was in the family business, and he had a part in the inheritance and in the running of that. And God called him into the church. And he literally walked away from his inheritance. He walked away from the business. He walked away from the family name on that product, again, that you and I have used. It is very common. It is very well known. You might even say it's widespread. But he walked away in order to serve God. He laid down his life in that way. He just walked out completely. Duty must come before self. Philippians 2 reminds us that we should not just look out for our personal needs and interests. Philippians 2 and verse number 1. That we must broaden our perspective in terms of what we consider important and necessary. If there is any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. If you esteem others better than you, it's hard to hold a grudge against those people. It's hard to not be able to forgive those people if indeed you look up to them in that way, by esteeming them respectfully, by not lifting yourself. But it says, let each of you look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Let each of you look around and see who it is that has need, and see if there's some way that you might fulfill that. In the church, brethren, it is our duty. But we don't do it because it's bondage. We do it because we want to serve God in that way. Paul has told me that one of the reasons that Carl is up and around where he is because Dick went over to the rest home and helped him get out of his wheelchair, and held his hands out where he'd walk on his own feet and not carry him, and just day after day, every other day, two or three times a week, he'd go over there, and he became the therapist, and he walked Carl around in the home. Now, nobody, you know, we could use different examples, we could use different names, we could go around the room, but this was something Paul was just reminding me of recently, that Carl's up and walking in part because a member of the body of Christ got up and helped him with his hands. And I think that's incredible. I think it's good. It's not better than anyone else. It's just serving God in that way. God said that he will not forget the work that we have done for him, that he will keep us in his own consciousness. But that we need to be careful, that we need to look to those people who serve God in order to be strengthened in our own zeal, strengthened in our own efforts. Hebrews 6 gives reference to the fact that we must be holding on to our strength. It says, beloved, verse 9, we are confident of better things concerning you, yes, things that accompany salvation, though we speak in this manner. For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward his name. God will remember our service to him, in that you have ministered to the saints, and you do minister. You used to do it, but you're still doing it. It isn't something where we did it once and it's over. We did enough and it's all we could have done. It says, and you still do minister. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promise. That by being together we strengthen each other and we help each other very specifically in that way. If you like to study your Bible, you'll study it. If you like to pray, you'll pray. It is not a burden to us when we want to do it. And yet there are things that we have to recognize that in God's service are difficult for us to do. And we have to ask God, give me a heart to desire these things. Because when we want to do them, then they get done. They rise up in priority in our lives. There were people years ago who attended the Church of God, who kept the Sabbath, kept the holy days, tithed, lived this life as much as appeared to be according to God's Word. It seemed so. And yet it apparently was a burden to them, because when somebody stood up and said, I will set you free from that, it is not an obligation anymore, they said, thank you. There were people that said, thank you, I am released, and they simply went off and lived their own ways. And there were people who said, I'm sorry, I love those laws. I love the Sabbath. I love the holy days and God's people, and I want to be together with them. I remember when the church was in the process of breaking up in that way, and I had resigned pastorally and was sitting in the congregation, recognizing that part of the congregation no longer looked at God's law as a blessing in many respects, and the rest of the congregation was still holding on to it. And the song leader got up and sang what is number 44 in our hymnal, Oh, how love I thy law. And some of the congregation was singing out louder than normal because of their desire to hold on to it. And some of the congregation was actually muted and not willing to even want to really focus on the words. And it was stunning to me. We'd sang this song together for decades, all of us together. But somebody came up and said, I will set you free. And there were people that it was a burden to them to sing this song. Oh, how love I thy law, it is ever with me. Thy commands make me wiser than my unfriendly foes. How sweet are thy words, more than honey is sweet. Obeying God was like sweetness as honey. From thy judgments eternal, let me never depart. It is when we love what God has given us that it is not a burden to us, and it is a duty that is gladly fulfilled. If you're stuck in a job that you don't like, you're going to be looking over your shoulder for a new one. If you're stuck in a relationship that you don't like, you will be tempted to do the same. And if you are stuck in your duty to God, then your chance of maintaining your convictions are going to be seriously stressed, seriously put at risk. We have to learn to love, to desire, and then the duty that God gives us is a rejoicing and a joy. Matthew 8 shows Peter's mother, who was sick with a fever. And verse 14 says, Jesus came to Peter's house, and he saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and served them. She was down sick, had to be anointed and healed, and she immediately got up and took care of them. And I just thought, it's amazing. It doesn't. It's such a small passage, but it gives the impression that this was what she was accustomed to serving and to assisting and to helping in that way. And as soon as she had strength, she was up and right back doing what it is that she wanted to be doing all along. Who are we serving? Who is it that we have had into our home? Who is it that we are helping? And in what way are we helping them? Sometimes we have to quantify it in our mind to assess where it is we are and what we have done. It's not like we get a list and then we get a grade with an A, B, or C on it. But it is a matter of learning to do duty before self. Self will have its needs. Self will never go away. There will always be more duties than we can fulfill. But duty comes first. We must do those things that must be done. And then we can choose to do those things that we desire as well. God says that He wants to give us the desires of our heart, but He gives us in a context of our calling, to His service and of our putting Him first. Matthew 25, very common to us, but a wonderful reminder. It says, when the Son of Man, verse 31, comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. And they put the sheep on His right hand, the goats on the left. The king will say to those on His right hand, come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, you gave Me food. Specifically gave Him food. I was thirsty, and you gave Me drink. I was a stranger, and you took Me in. Naked, and you clothed Me. Sick, and you visited Me. In prison, and you came to Me. It's interesting that the righteous didn't even look at what they had done as really being memorable in that way or representative of having done it to Christ. The righteous will answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see You hungry and feed You, or thirsty and give You drink? When did we see You as a stranger or naked? When did we see You sick or in prison? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, My brethren, you did it to Me. It is indeed the duty God has called us to. It needs to be done. How many scriptures are there in the Bible about the widows and the fatherless? How many places does God remind us to care for those who are in need? Now He says if a man doesn't work, he doesn't eat. We're not expected to just live off of each other. That's not the point. We are supposed to be fruitful and diligent in our labor and our efforts. But God blesses our efforts in various ways. He can bless our effort by giving us increase, or He can bless our desire to serve Him and our love for His law by allowing another person to share with us as well. One of the elders that was doing Bible studies in Pasadena when Michelle and I lived there gave a Bible study on the fact that you have to be willing to receive for some people to be in a position to be able to give. That there will be those who have to be willing. Not out grabbing and gathering up, but because of specific need, they have to allow then people to help them so that those who give will be blessed as well. I said we were in Portland last week, or at least I was, some of us in this room. Some people go to Portland to play volleyball. Some people go to play basketball. I go to talk. That's my sport. Super talking. I had more chance, in some respects, to sit with a few of you in this room in Portland than we would have here, you know, on this end. We could sit there at a table and visit for an hour or two, and it was quite pleasant. But the members, again, I stayed with, we would always come back to this discussion. When you have to make that choice between what is most needful and what is most desired, choose what is most needful first. Dr. Laura has her radio program, and if I remember the wording right, she used to sign off each one with, now go take on the day. That goes back maybe a year or two. At some point, she would say, now go take on the day. And then she changed it. And I like the change because she changed it. And again, I think the wording is close to now go do the right thing. There's a different focus there between doing what is right and just going out and challenging whatever the environment would be. Do the right thing. The right thing might be forgiveness. The right thing might be unity. The right thing might be endurance. It's what we have to choose. Unity is a choice. It's not happenstance. Now, it's great when it's easy. That's a great blessing. But the reason a church is a congregation and a family is to give us all an opportunity to practice on each other. And we do that, do we not? We practice on each other in those ways. But there are those who choose unity. They endure. And they choose to forgive. Luke 17, It's not like we get the gold star when we do what's expected. It's our duty. It's simply our duty. It is a higher calling. It is a higher calling than those who do not understand. Luke 17 and verse number 7. Which of you having a servant plowing or tending sheep will say to him when he has come in from the field, come at once and sit down to eat? Will he not rather say to him, prepare something for my supper, gird yourself, serve me till I have eaten and drunk, and afterwards you will eat and drink? Does he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I think not. So likewise you, when you've done all those things that you are commanded, it's the Ten Commandments. How I love thy law. When you do those things that are commanded, say we are unprofitable servants, we have only done that which was our duty to do. And so while in that one respect it is a very high calling, it is what God expects. God expects us to love our neighbor. God expects us to put him first. He expects us to help care for each other and to meet each other's needs and to serve each other in that way, because there's no other way to serve God. There's no other way to do what he has called us to do. In the Old Testament, it was stated in Ecclesiastes 12, fear God, keep his commandments, for that is the whole duty of man. It was always the duty of man. It's just that there were not many, indeed, who could understand that and fulfill it in that way. Coming to church on the Sabbath is our duty. Assembling before God is according to his command. Being together is the opposite of being separate and being alone. It is our duty to be together. God expects it. It is our duty to rejoice in our service to God. But again, at times and in various ways, we might have to ask God. When David sinned and he went to God, he says, create in me a clean heart, a pure heart. Restore me into your presence. So that process continually takes place in our lives. I'd like to say that my life just kind of goes like this and it's ever, ever increasing. It's not so. It doesn't happen that way. I wish. No, there's a lot of big, deep valleys, and then you climb back out, and there's some more valleys, then there's the Grand Canyon, then there's the Mariana Trench, and here you go, but you come back out of that, and I go to God, and I ask, restore me. I want the closeness. I want the intimacy. I want the joy. I want to be happy serving you, doing your will. I want to love my duties. I don't want to do them because I have to do them. I don't want to just check off the box because it's on the list. I don't want that. There's a lot of us that could focus in those ways. And, you know, even Michelle, I have to go back and think. You know, if she asks me to do something and I say, oh, all right, you know what the next statement is? Forget it. I mean, oh, all right, and okay, honey. The next statement is forget it. Because she wants me to want to do my duty. It's fair. I have to come back out of the trench, you know, or the grave, whichever way it ended up. But it's important. Serving God and doing our duty is not a burden. If it's a burden, you're heading already for the door. You're walking down the aisle going the wrong way, if it is a burden. If dating in the church is a burden, you put yourself at risk. If married in the faith is a burden, then you put yourself at risk. If tithing, if going to the feast, if taking off the Sabbath day because you have a job and your employer threatens you, if that's a burden, then it's just like those people sitting there waiting. Someone says, you know what, I'll set you free. And the chance is you just might take it. So we have to reach for the fact that we rejoice in doing that which we have been required to do. It is the only way you can turn the other cheek. You have to be willing to. Yeah, some big bully can make you turn the other cheek by simply threatening you, but that's not of the heart. When you turn the other cheek, when you forgive, or when you go the extra mile, it's because it is not a burden to you. You're more willing to run the extra mile, if need be, than you were to walk the first. That's the only way that we can get there. Matthew 11 talks about the fact that our service to God should be indeed very light on our heart and in our mind. Matthew 11 and verse number 28. Christ says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke." Okay, a yoke is what you labor under, and you work in the fields in the heat of the day. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest in your souls. My yoke is easy, my burden is light." It's only easy and light when you love the yoke, when you love the law. Oh, how love I thy law. Duty has to come before self. But it needs to be something we desire. We desire to be in God's yoke. We desire to be in His service. I look back at the Queen and the life that she has lived and the things that she has denied herself. You know what? She's incredibly rich. And I don't think it really buys a whole lot of pleasure. It buys a lot of duty. Everything she says, every impression she gives, everybody she responds to or doesn't respond to, everyone who expects her to make some allegiance in the sense of to go and to visit or to represent the kingdom in the right and proper way has to be fulfilled. Every minute of her day, you can imagine, is on a schedule somewhere and there's an obligation to be met. There is an obligation to be paid. And yet she's rich. There is a very high price for what she has done, but she has been willing to do it. There will be a very great loss when she is gone. Romans 12. God has not called us to destruction. He's called us to mercy. He's called us to faith. Romans 12. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." It is not an unreasonable thing. It is not asking too much. When you love God's law, when you love God's ways, then it is an opportunity and a blessing to be able to fulfill His will. It is your reasonable service. "And do not be conformed to this world, who has taken and removed in many ways God out of the equation and put self first. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable in the perfect will of God." Duty, indeed, before self. Work before pleasure. Work before play. It's important that we have release. It's important that we have, again, the desires of our heart. But when the desires of our heart are the duty that we have been called to, that's when our rejoicing will be the greatest, and our blessings will indeed flow from God.